Dr. Raymond Mock, and it's Real One. So could I ask you first of all, Dr. Mock, about your family. Have they always lived in Hong Kong?
I am the fifth generation.
So you are a real Hong Kong family?
Yes, born and bred.
Born and bred. Well, what was your early life like? Could you tell me something about your family?
My family, actually, most of them worked in the Butterfield and Swire Company. And at that time, my grandfather and granduncle and whatnot, they all joined in as the compadre of the BNS.
The BNS, what is that?
Butterfield and Swire.
The?
Butterfield and Swire.
That was the firm?
Yes. Now it's called the Swire.
So what was your life like growing up in Hong Kong? What sort of a place was it before the war?
Quiet. And actually, I am the number seven in the family. I was put in a boarding school at age of seven. And the school still stands now in the staff's room.
But what is it called?
Ling Lam.
Ling Lam.
Yeah.
When did you decide you wanted to go into medicine?
Well, after Ling Lam, that's the primary school, I went into La Salle College. That's in Kowloon Side. We moved to Kowloon Side to live at that time. And my brother, the eldest one, also studying medicine in America. So I think he gave me more or less the inspiration to join into the Hong Kong University.
And you were studying medicine there?
Yes. From 1938 until the war time, 41.
When did you join the volunteers?
1937. Actually, I was transferred from the Sea Scout. And then first joining the number 4 machine gun company. That's a Chinese company. When I joined in the university in 1938, I was still in the machine gun company. Only in the second year, that is 39, I transferred to the field ambulance.
That, the volunteer defense force, was it a very mixed group in terms of ages and occupations and different nationalities?
In the number 4 machine gun company, yes. Actually, some of them are government servants, some of them are students, and I think we all joined in for the fun at the beginning. In the university, we all got in the field ambulance, because at that time, I think they think the situation is a bit critical, so we all joined in, one thing or the other.
That was about 1939, you say?
39, 40, 41.
What did you know about the Japanese at that time? Did you know what was happening on the mainland of China?
Yes.
You were realistic, were you, about them?
In fact, in the week before the invasion, we were in a training camp in Lo Wu, New Territories. We have to cut short the camping training, and then we have to come straight back to town on Friday. Friday instead of Sunday, and the elation is on Monday.
What do you think about the training you received? Was it a good one, do you think?
Well, Field Ambulance, mainly as the medical students from the Hong Kong University, the majority of them, we were trained in the Morris First Aid, and also use of firearms, just in case, to protect ourselves or our casualties. So I already trained in both, so I got promoted to the rank of a sergeant during the war.
I suppose stretcher bearing came into it quite a lot during the war, didn't it?
Yes, yes.
Did you have experience of that during your training?
Well, our training is quite elaborate, and go to the main first aid and also the field first aid.
When you think of those days, you know, 1940, going into 1941, how well was Hong Kong defended?
Well, we got all kinds of rumors. In fact, we understand it's difficult to defend Hong Kong with such a large area in new territory and such a small battalion. And we have to use volunteers, we have to use the Indian Army, and the Canadians only come in at the end.
Did that boost morale when the Canadian reinforcements came?
Yes. Then we realized they are not properly equipped, because their armors, the guns and whatnot, they are not arrived at the same time.
How about air power? Did you have any air force defense?
At the end. I think they were all destroyed during the first hour of the conflict.
And how about the Navy? Because after all, Hong Kong had been a very big station, hadn't it? What was the naval presence in 41?
Only two or three small gunboats. We call it gunboats. And also a few torpedo attacking ships. There's not no big battleship around here. No.
How about medical preparations? Did you have any idea, you know, if temporary hospitals were being set up?
It is quite well organized. In fact, in 1940 and 41, and many schools like the LaSalle College and the university, and all more or less arranged to be transferred into a field hospital in case of emergency. And the other hospitals, like the Government Hospital, Queen Mary Hospital, they are all properly prepared.
So on the eve of the Japanese attack, as you explained earlier, Dr. Mok, you were actually training. You were training in camp, yes. Were you all kitted out by that time? You had uniforms and your weapons and everything.
In fact, we're supposed to have night training during that period, but we have to cancel it, because we heard that the Japanese soldiers already crossing the border and then withdraw in the morning. So we, in order to avoid any misunderstanding, they cancelled all of my training in camp.
So you'd had no night training at all?
No night training. Only training in daytime.
Could I now ask you about your experience, if you could take me through the events of the Japanese attack and what happened to you?
We got back from camp on Friday evening. On Saturday, I went back home to see my mother. Then I went back to the university hospital on Sunday, because by that time we already got mobilized through by the radio, and we have to report on duty on Monday. That's the 8, 7 o'clock. I reported at headquarters at 7, while we are all waiting to issue arrival, and also the destination we're supposed to go. We are all waiting at the parade ground. Then we saw the plane coming over, bombing on Taipei Airport.
Were there many planes?
We can't see definitely how many planes, but we can hear the sound. Then we heard the order that the war is on. Then my post at that time was in Mount Davis. I got a unit of 4 dressers together with me, and then they got a car to pick me up to the fort, Mount Davis, in the west side of Hong Kong. And first few days, it just got continued bumping, because we haven't got any air force, and the Japanese plane come over at ease anytime they like. And also we got the bumping from the battleship outside. We have 3 big guns, 9.21 inches, in the fort. But 2 of them are facing the wrong direction. Only 1 can be moved, turn around. And you don't get ordinary casualties from the bomb. Quite a few soldiers get injured. And since we got continued bombing, we moved our dressing station and also the headquarters of the fort down to 40 feet underground at the command unit. After continued bombing, this 40 feet underground has no protection. And we all sitting around against the wall, and then we saw the ceiling fell in, and all the mud, rocks and whatnot fell in the middle of the room. And then another bomb came in, and luckily it didn't explode, and that's why I'm still here. And after that, we got order to abandon fort, especially for the medical unit. We left behind only a skeleton unit under Dr. Solomon Barth. They work in the Mount Davis all through that period. The rest of us were moved down to Jubilee Fort, which is down at the base of at the bottom of the hill. And we also get continued bombing there. And casualties rather few at Jubilee Fort, and we until 9 December 25th on the Christmas Day, we got told that we surrender. That was on about the afternoon, not about 3 o'clock. And then I got the order to report back to the university, just in case we were needed to help in Queen Mary Hospital, because we are mostly medical students.
Had you been able to cope with the casualties until the surrender? You know, did you have enough supplies?
We had enough supply. In fact, all we did is the first aid, and then we moved them straight to Queen Mary Hospital for any eventual surgery or whatever.
And were they coping all right, Queen
yes,
Mary?
Yes.
That was, they had enough supplies, did they? And I suppose from what you've been saying, Dr. Mock, that most of the injuries were from the bombing rather than bayoneting wounds, were they?
In the Mount Davis and Jubilee Fort, we haven't seen a Japanese soldier. Because they landed on the east side of the island, and we are lucky on the west side.
What sort of wounds were they that you had to deal with as a very young medical student?
Mainly shrapnel wounds, many times fractures, and even half buried in the hillside, in the mud and the sand.
Did you have to go out with your stretchers?
Yes, but normally when they get injured, most of them are in the port itself. A few occasions, the machine gun company under the Portuguese, which is outside our port, and there's a few casualties, and we have to carry them on stretchers.
Had you heard at this stage of what had happened in some of the other hospitals, St. Stephen's College and the Jockey Club?
I only heard about that after the war. I had no first experience in that. In fact, my friend, my very close friend, also in the same class with me in Hong Kong University, he works in a St. Stephen's College. And was really lucky to be alive.
Could you tell me what happened there that you heard from your friend?
They continued the fighting after the surrender because they didn't get the order yet. Eventually, the Japanese got into the college. Went into the hospital and more or less bedded every body on the bed, the sick one. And the doctor in charge is a Dr. Black, a university counselor. He got more or less murdered there and got killed. And together with a few nurses, he got raped and killed. That's what I heard from my friend. Eventually he escaped. He just threw away all his uniform and escaped together with a few Chinese men.
Were you, very shocked to hear what had happened to wounded people?
Yes, everybody got so shocked. That when I was in camp, in some simple camp, I'm looking on the list of the members of the field ambulance, and when I come across the name of my friend, I don't know whether to put him down, missing, alive or dead. So I just put that in the list. Eventually, the soldier in England after the war.
So could I ask you now, Dr. Mock, about the surrender? Would this have been the first time you saw the Japanese?
Yes, in the university campaign.
How were they behaving there?
Yeah, behaving very civilized. One of the senior Japanese officers came along with our own officer at that time, Professor Wright. He said, I thought we were taking to Queen Mary Hospital to work. And they said, no, you are now prisoner of war. So we marched from the university compound to the headquarters in Carbon Road. And then we stayed there for 2 or 3 days. Wednesday we crossed the harbor and then marched along Leighton Road to some simple camp.
During that time, did you have wounded people with you?
No.
You were all fit people?
All the wounded ones, the sick ones, either in the Queen Mary University Hall or Border Road Military Hospital.
So that march, what was that like? Do you remember it vividly? Were people about?
The whole street was lined with people. In fact, we got abuse from the people more than the Japanese guards. And we had to carry our own kit bag. And all along the road, the Japanese kept quiet. And the other population cheering us. And luckily I saw my brother in the street. And just look at each other. We didn't even bother and don't dare to wave at each other.
Was that humiliating for you?
Yes, very much.
And after all, from what I've heard, the volunteers had fought very bravely.
That is in the number 3 machine, the AA battery, the live wound. The most casualty actually came from the number 3 machine gun company. They were fighting in the Wong Lai Chung Gap together with the Canadians, and that's all in the history book now.
But the volunteers had put up a good fight, I understand.
Yeah. And nobody escaped. Without any reason, they all stay until the end, the volunteers.
No one deserted?
No.
Did other troops desert, did you hear?
No.
When you arrived at the camp, what were the conditions like?
Well, a few empty huts. No floorboard, no window, nothing at all. And we were given one hut, completely empty. They said, and then we have run about 30 to 40 Chinese together. And then we have to use whatever we can to more or less to have a good sleep. At that time, the fence actually is not mended or guarded. Anybody can walk out. And the Japanese had no experience of how to keep a prisoner walled. In fact, the first 2 minutes, a lot of people escaped.
Did you feel tempted to?
At that time, I got a few friends and relatives inside. They said, you better stay in together and see what happens since we have run about all together by 35,000 people in the camp. We better follow the big crowd and go out individually.
So how long did it take to get the camp in some sort of order, would you say?
I think within 1 or 2 weeks. We just take whatever we can, trees, woods and whatnot, just cover the window, and then the Japanese provided some sort of a bedding. And we make it into one long bed along the whole hall, so that that might be a long house in Borneo and whatnot.
How about food? Were you given enough food to eat?
That's the last thing. I don't think anybody got enough food. At the beginning, we mainly just get some lots of rice, and sometimes just a spoon of sugar. Sometimes we get a bit of spring onion, a bit of vegetables. And eventually the cookhouse is well organized. We have somebody to cook from the volunteers to look after the cookhouse. And I remember I was in charge of the party bringing the food in from the truck sent by the Japanese. And one day they sent in a lot of wheat. We are so happy to see the chunks of beef and whatnot, thinking it's the big fish. Then they realized that was the stinking meat from dairy farm because of the lack of electricity, the cold storage come down. So we got all this rotten meat. And then we decided, together with the cook, I said, make it and boil it into soup. Just keep on boiling. I said, whatever germ there is, it all gets cured. And on top of it, we got a whole pot of suet. And that is the life-saving thing. So we got a spoon. Oil, a dripping, together with the plain rice. I think that gives us some fat and oil. At the beginning, you can buy whatever you can on the waterfront. You've got the boats coming in, champagne, all kinds of different, of course, at a big price. And the Chinese group managed to get a few tins of bully beef. Those are the huge army ration tins, and we keep it as the communal stock so that we can share it with everybody.
Did you have any money with you when you went in?
We have a tiny bit of money because we get paid during the actual fighting during the and I don't remember we got pay inside. At that time, money is very, very useful because the things are not expensive. So for 10 Hong Kong dollars, you can buy a big tin of bully beef.
What was happening regarding medical facilities in the camp? Would you have been involved with that at all?
No. They have the Army Medical Unit, the RAMC, and they have enough doctors. And Dr. Art, Dr. Rodriguez from the volunteers, are working in the hospital. And none of us medical students are required. So they have the staff, but they don't have enough medicine. So we got all kinds of deficiency diseases. Very, very bad. Peripheral neuritis. And all then came the diphtheria epidemic, the diarrhea, dysentery. And I don't know how they managed to fade out by itself more or less. Medicine is very, very scary. The Chinese are lucky that we resume